Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Linda, and today I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram. This is Wednesday, October 5th, 2022. Pfluger, open borders create chaos. Congressman discusses illegal crossings, human trafficking, sexual assaults, fentanyl, by Ben Schaefer. Congressman August Pfluger summed up his trip to the U.S.-Mexican border in McAllen with one statement. Every Border Patrol agent, high-ranking down to agents in patrol cars, told me that there are no consequences for people coming across the border, he said. The San Angelo Republican, whose district includes Midland and Odessa, said this lack of consequences is the main reason that there have been more than 2 million people who have crossed the border illegally this year and last. Each month, 200,000 people do so, according to Pfluger. It's such a tragic situation, said Pfluger, who told the Reporter Telegram during a phone interview that he met hundreds of people along the border or in detention facilities. They're having to pay, on average, $5,000. That's anecdotal. But they're paying anywhere between $1,500 to $10,000 per person to get here, Pfluger said. He added that when Mexican immigrants arrive in the United States, they typically still have to pay cartels and human trafficking organizations a lot of money. The congressman also detailed atrocities that take place at the border, specifically against women. I think the Border Patrol agents are estimating that at least 30% of the women have been sexually assaulted on their journey up here, which takes 15 to 30 days, he said. Pfluger also addressed the persistent threat of the dangerous narcotic fentanyl and the use of drones at the border. A lot of times it's being delivered by drone. A drone will pop over the border and drop it where someone can pick it up, a pre-coordinated place, he said about fentanyl trafficking. Pfluger added that the drones are being used to spy on the border for areas where Border Patrol agents are not as prevalent. They know where the Border Patrol agents are, and they go someplace else, he said. He stated the United States has laws on the book that could put an end to these issues, but they aren't being enforced, which allows cartels and human trafficking organizations to cause chaos. On Tuesday, Pfluger met with the local law enforcement, including sheriffs and police chiefs from Midland, Odessa, and a representative from the Department of Public Safety. I just listened, said Pfluger, who added the local law enforcement said 80 to 90% of crimes being committed in Midland and Odessa are related to drugs. From homicide to petty theft, Pfluger said, they're related to drugs. Pfluger claimed local police departments have never seen a wave of drug-related crime like this before. When you connect the dots, the reason crime rates have increased so much is those drugs. A majority of those drugs, if not all of them, are coming across the southern border, Pfluger said. Because the border is open, you see a massive increase in crime. He said the round table was sad, having to hear about the impact of fentanyl, including overdoses and the deaths that are fentanyl-related. Lastly, Pfluger said, President Biden's open border policies are the reason that 110,000 people were killed by fentanyl last year. He said local law enforcement leaders wanted to know how they can assist the federal government in fentanyl education and awareness. He added that President Joe Biden doesn't need to implement new laws, but needs to enforce the laws already in place regarding border control. MISD asks for public's input. Board will seek help with superintendent qualities qualifications by Stuart Doreen. Midland ISD wants the public's input that it will use in the search for the district's next superintendent. Midland ISD reported Tuesday that it has a superintendent search survey available for those wanting to participate. The Google document includes questions about candidate qualification priorities, issues at Midland ISD needing to be addressed, and strengths of the district. The Midland ISD Board of Trustees has selected former interim superintendent Ann Dixon with Walsh Gallegos to conduct the superintendent search process. Applications will be accepted through November 3rd, and the community survey will close the following day, according to the district. On November 16th, the new Midland ISD board will review the community input, review applications, select candidates to interview, discuss the contract terms for the next superintendent, finalize interview questions, and discuss background check information. The first round of interviews is set to take place November 28th through 30th, according to MISD. The top two candidates will be selected for second interviews, which are scheduled to take place December 5th through 7th. District and search officials have told the Reporter-Telegram they would like to have the next superintendent in place by January 3rd, 2023. Midland-Odessa rents Still Trail Rest of Region, State, by Stuart Doreen. Rents are climbing in Midland and Odessa. What does that mean? Apartmentlist.com stated in its September national report that rents in the Petroplex cities are closing in on others across the region like San Angelo and Abilene and are still well behind other larger metropolitan areas like Austin, Dallas, Fort Worth, Houston, and San Antonio. The website shows the median rent for a one-bedroom apartment in Midland was $791. The rent for a two-bedroom apartment increased to $991. In Odessa, those median rents were $659 and $856, respectively. Apartment List showed median two-bedroom rents of $1,126 in El Paso, $1,072 in San Angelo, and $1,023 in Abilene. Across the state, Austin showed the highest median rent for a larger metropolitan city, $1,861. There were suburbs of Dallas where median two-bedroom rents easily topped $2,000, including $2,320 in Flower Mound. One place the increased rents also impacted was the larger percentage increases. Odessa showed a year-over-year increase of 21% in September, while the increase in Midland was 14%, two of the largest percentage increases in the state. Of course, with rents that are among the lowest in the state, increases will appear that much more dramatic percentage-wise. ApartmentList.com reported that rents nationally are up 7.5% compared to September 2021. The year-over-year growth is down from a peak of nearly 18% at the beginning of the year. West Texan by Nature Club honors Alsop by J.C. Lewis, Midland Reporter-Telegram. West Texan by Nature recently honored James Alsop at an event at the Petroleum Club of Midland. James Alsop has practiced with Lynch Chapel and Alsop since 1967. Throughout his career, Alsop has remained focused on helping clients achieve success through his principal practice areas, including contracts, corporate finance, asset acquisitions and dispositions, commercial land transactions, real estate, probate, and trust. Alsop served as the assistant city attorney for the city of Midland before joining LCNA. He has called Midland home for more than 50 years and has dedicated his time and expertise to several local nonprofit entities, including Shriner University, the Texas Bar Foundations, Permian Basin Area Foundation, Midland Memorial Hospital and Medical Center, Midland Odessa Area AIDS Support, Inc., Permian Basin MHMR Foundation and Hospice of Midland. He is a U.S. Army veteran and an elder and former trustee for his church.
Hello, this is Cindy. I'm continuing to read from the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Wednesday. Basin PBS to provide kids space at airport by Ben Schaefer. Basin Public Broadcasting Service announced the addition of the Basin PBS Kids Space, a fun and educational area at Midland International Airport for kids and families to use while waiting for flights. Tuesday's press release detailed the purpose of the Kids Space and Basin PBS's commitment to investing in the area's children. The space will include colorful furniture that's accessible to parents and children, a free library where children can take and leave books, a reading area, an iPad station with access to only PBS Kids educational applications, and a busy board for busy hands. Basin PBS press release states that young children are eager to learn and achieve their goals. This space will provide a toolkit for learning, expressing emotions, and more, all while waiting for a flight. Basin PBS continues to invest in children all across West Texas. We are excited to partner with the Midland International Air and Spaceport and Permian Resources to bring this interactive play area that will spark imagination, educate, and entertain families as they wait for their flights. Laura Wolf, Basin PBS General Manager and CEO, said. James Walter, co-CEO of Permian Resources, said, "Permian Resources is excited to partner with Basin PBS and the Midland International Air and Spaceport to provide a safe, fun, and interactive space for the children in our community to learn and explore at our regional airport." He added that Permian Resources is committed to investing in projects that improve and enrich the quality of life in the community. Obituaries and death notices from the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Wednesday. Duke Wayne Roush, age 66, of Midland, passed away on Sunday, October 2nd. Memorial services will be on October 6th at 11 a.m. at First Presbyterian Church, followed by a reception. Duke was born on October 27, 1955, in Amarillo, to Don and Phyllis Roush. Duke is survived by his wife Cheryl of 36 years, his two daughters, Ashley Roush of Midland and Lindsay Roush, and her husband Arturo Rodriguez of Lubbock, his mother and his sister Donna Roush of Guthrie, Oklahoma. Duke is preceded in death by his grandparents, Elmo and Margaret Duke, Marie and Lawrence Roush, and his father Don Roush. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to the Lone Star Animal Sanctuary and American Cancer Society. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Georgia Elizabeth Summers, 89, of Midland, passed away from this life on October 3rd at home with her loving family by her side. Georgia was born in Waterloo, Iowa, to Agnes and Michael Zarifis on October 9, 1932. Georgia was preceded in death by her husband, L. Hugh Summers, of 48 years. Her brothers, John and Paul Zarifis, parents Agnes and Michael Zarifis, her sisters-in-law, Carol Lisenberry and Patsy Owens, brothers-in-law, Daniel Lisenberry, William Summers, Murrell Summers, Dean Owens. Georgia is survived by her daughters Agnes Yall and husband Michael, Peggy Smith and husband Brady, Patty Pisklak and her husband Joe, grandchildren, as well as many beloved nieces and nephews. Rosary will be at 7 p.m. on Thursday, October 6th at St. Anne's Catholic Church in Midland. Funeral Mass will be held at 10 a.m. at St. Anne's Catholic Church in Midland, with Monsignor Larry Droll officiating. Interment will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park of Midland. Arrangements are entrusted to Willowbrook Funeral Home. In lieu of flowers, please make donations to CASA of West Texas. Ramiro M. Luna, 94, of Midland, passed away on October 1st. A visitation will begin at 6:30 p.m. with a rosary beginning at 7 p.m. at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Services will be at 10 a.m. Thursday, October 6th at St. Anne's Catholic Church. Interment will follow at Fairview Cemetery. Ramiro Luna was born on September 21st, 1928, in Ozona, Texas, to the late Salome Luna and Isabel Guerrero. He is preceded in death by his beloved wife, Nestora Luna, and sons Ramiro Luna Jr. and Richard A. Luna. Ramiro is survived by his children Alex Luna and wife Lisa, Norma Duran and husband Toribio, daughter-in-law Ava Luna, all of Midland, and Connie Luna and John Daly from Coppell, Texas. Grandchildren and several great-grandchildren, nephews, nieces, and in-laws. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to Disabled American Veterans or St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Veronica Michelle McAfee, Mickey, passed away in Dallas on Saturday, September 10th, at the age of 55 years old. Veronica was born to Dr. John W. McAfee, Sr. and Ruby Lee Runnels. She was preceded in death by her maternal grandparents, Alvin and Connie Mae Green, and her paternal grandparents, Howard and Julie McAfee. She leaves to cherish her memory her mother, Ruby L. Runnels, Solomon, stepfather, her father, Dr. John W. McAfee, Sr., and stepmother, Karen, her sister, Charlotte McAfee, her brother, John W. McAfee, Jr., her stepbrothers, Christopher and Derek Walker, a niece, uncles, aunts, cousins, and friends. Services were held in Terrell, Texas on Saturday, September 17th, under the direction of DuBose Funeral Home. Virginia Catherine Kingan, age 80, of Midland, passed away on Tuesday, August 30th. Virginia was born on January 29, 1942. A graveside service for Mrs. Virginia Catherine Kingan will be held on Friday, October 7th at 3 p.m. at Ellis Rest Haven Memorial Garden in Midland. Librado Galindo Lacon, 83, passed away on Monday, October 3rd. Viewing will be held Wednesday, October 5th from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., with an evening service at 7 p.m. Wednesday evening at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin at nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at www.llewellyngarciapipkinfh.com. Hello, this is Cindy. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Wednesday, October 5th. Police: Nurses Rescue Newborns from Attacker, by Kim Smith. Two nurses, a respiratory therapist, and a hospital security officer saved two babies from being choked to death at Odessa Regional Medical Center Monday night. The affidavit details that Marcus McCowan Jr., 18, was at ORMC Monday evening because his girlfriend was in labor, and he began acting oddly around 6:30 p.m. Registered nurse Taylor Frandenberg told police McCowan came into the nurse's station in the labor and delivery area, grabbed her arm and made an unintelligible statement, and the charged nurse made him leave. McCowan was then seen running back and forth in the hallway, which they thought was odd and unreasonable. A short time later, McCowan ran at full speed at registered nurse Haley Sanchez, registered nurse Cassandra Reyes, and a mom who was being released from the hospital and holding a newborn baby in a carrier. He was screaming and yelling, and he shoved Sanchez while trying to get into the nursery, causing her to hit a wall with her shoulder and fall to the ground. The nurses told police they saw McCowan try to get the baby out of the carrier, and when he was unable to, he began to strangle the baby with both hands, causing the baby's skin color to change. Sanchez and Reyes were able to separate the baby from McCowan's grip after ending up in the lactation room. Martha Fuentes, a respiratory therapist, heard the yelling, came to the nursery, and chased him after him when he ran into the nursery, an area not accessible to the public. Fuentes saw McCowan reach into the bed of a newborn baby and begin to strangle her. As the baby's face and lips changed color, McCowan picked the baby up from the neck, shake her, and tell her to die. Fuentes told police McCowan appeared as though he was going to throw the baby to the ground, but she placed her hand on the back of the baby's head and slowly escorted McCowan toward the ground to reduce the possibility of the baby falling. The baby was turning purple when security officer Lori Tavares arrived, and together they were able to get the baby away from McCowan. When police arrived, they got McCowan into handcuffs, despite the fact he was struggling, and they found a THC vape pen on him. During the search, the officers reported McCowan tried to get a corporal's gun from his belt. As they were in an elevator getting ready to leave the hospital, McCown tried again to get the same officer's gun. Online Ector County jail records indicate McCown is facing the following charges: 2 counts of attempted capital murder, possession of a controlled substance, attempt to take a weapon from an officer, assault of a public service, resisting arrest, criminal trespass, and assault. Records show McCown has a San Angelo address. Josephine C. Martin, Vice President of Communications for Steward Healthcare, released a single statement when asked for an interview. The police responded to an incident at Odessa Regional Medical Center last night. In accordance with HIPAA regulations, we are unable to comment on any patient's specific circumstances. When asked about security protocols and security staffing levels at the hospital, Martin said she wasn't familiar with them, but would ask ORMC President Stacy Brown for details. She later released the following statement: "The safety of our patients and staff is our highest priority, and we are in compliance with all regulatory security requirements. We are conducting a thorough review of the incident and remain committed to serving the needs of this community. We want to thank our staff for their tireless work on behalf of patients." Brown released the following statement shortly late Monday afternoon: "I want to express my sincere gratitude to those who responded to the incident last evening, especially our nurses, therapists, and security team, who worked diligently to protect innocent babies and others. The staff and physicians, along with the response team from the Odessa Police Department, are incredible heroes, and we are also grateful to each of them. Our attention is now focused on caring for and supporting those who were impacted by this, including our patients, their families, and our staff." 2 months ago, Odessa Regional Medical Center announced it had been recognized by HealthGrades as a 2022 recipient of their Distinguished Obstetrics and Gynecology Excellence Award and Labor and Delivery Excellence Award. This distinction places Odessa Regional Medical Center among the top 5% of hospitals evaluated for overall OBGYN care by HealthGrades, as well as the top 5% of hospitals evaluated for labor and delivery outcomes. "We constantly strive to provide the highest quality care to our patients throughout every stage of life," Brown said. "In every step of the delivery process, our women's care team works to bring the highest quality to our patients and their newborn children." Gerke details crime stats for council. The Odessa City Council on Tuesday heard an update on crime statistics, as well as a discussion on whether or not to update the city's fire codes. OPD Chief of Police Michael Gerke said reported personal crime is down a little more than 1%. Personal crimes are things like homicides, assaults, kidnapping, and others. He said from January to August 31st, 2022, that homicides were 4 last year and 7 this year to date. Most other personal crimes were down slightly in the same period. Reported rapes were 33 last year and 35 this year, and robberies last year were 75 and 44 this year. Simple assaults were up from 1,509 to 1,588. Under property crime, he said burglary and shoplifting were both down, as well as shoplifting and stolen vehicles. They discussed at length amending the City of Odessa Fire Code and the adoption of the 2021 Odessa Fire Marshal's fee schedule. The fees typically affect contractors and developers. They also considered awarding a bid for Tanglewood Lane reconstruction from Penbrook Street to 52nd Street, and also a bid for Meadow Avenue reconstruction from Murphy Street to I-20 Service Road. They also discussed approving a lease agreement with a Black Cultural Council for the Buse Historical Center. The city recently paid $114,589 to repair damage to the center from water. They also heard from City Manager Michael Marrero on a resolution to deny the May 13th filing of Encore's intent to increase rates. He said approval allows the denial of the increase and the chance to renegotiate the rate. Meeting Health Gaps Summit topic. Identifying healthcare needs and gaps and how various organizations can come together to solve those issues was the focus of Building the Basin, a Permian Basin Healthcare Workforce Summit, Tuesday at the Odessa Marriott and Conference Center, moderated by Midland Development Corporation Executive Director Sarah Harris. It featured a variety of panels, including one on healthcare recruitment and retention. The recruitment and retention panel included officials from Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center, the City of Odessa and Midland and Executives for Medical Center and Midland Memorial Hospitals and Permian Regional Medical Center in Andrews. Midland Memorial President and Chief Executive Officer Russell Myers said many people who work at the hospital are married to or connected with someone who works in oil. If we can, we do our best to make it an appealing place, Myers said. It's amazing how often people who have left us for what they thought were greener pastures are anxious to come back. Because we have created positive working environments and a really good supportive community that they don't necessarily find in a city of 4 million somewhere else. So emphasizing those things with people and trying to convince them to stay is a big part of what we do, Myers said. He added that it's important to keep building a pipeline of people who are here. Myers said they have made huge investments in training fledgling nurses and others who go to school here and graduate. They come to the hospital and still need significant amounts of specialty training. We do invest a lot of resources in making their professional experience the best it can be so they will stay. The downside of that, of course, is it makes them really attractive to those guys in Houston and Dallas and other places that didn't have to pay to train them. But we keep doing it anyway because we know we have to keep the pipeline going, Myers said. Permian Regional Medical Center Chief Executive Officer Donnie Booth said they have found that people who are raised in this area are going to stay because they know what they've got here. It's an amazing community. The Permian Basin is second to none, in my opinion. I was born and raised basically here in the Permian Basin. But again, we see the same thing. They go, they leave for greener pastures, and sure enough, they turn around and come right back because they realize that those big metropolitan areas just can't lay a finger on the Permian Basin, Booth said. Asked what can be done to emphasize the strength of the Permian Basin, Midland Mayor Patrick Payton said when he first moved to Midland, there were 99,000 people. I used to refer to this place as Mayberry on speed, but generational changes take place about every 18 to 20 years. The other thing I was saying back in the early 2000s and then around 2008, 9, and 10, we started seeing fracking take off. The industry was turning from a mining industry to a manufacturing industry. So our whole basin has been fundamentally changing, while at the same time getting younger. And as harsh as this might sound, I think the biggest impediment to recruiting people is we're going to have to grow up and act like a big city, Payton said. We did some research back in the early 2000s about what's the number where a community becomes no longer just dependent on an industry. In other words, it can sustain itself with other industries. The number was 150,000. So now if you look at Midland and even look at Odessa combined, we're about 300,000. That's round numbers, but you're 150,000 apiece, Payton said. At some point, people have to decide to grow up, invest up, and own who we are, Payton said. We can bring them out here as long as we want, let them look at sunsets and sunrises and say how beautiful that is. But until we start owning the fact that we're an outdoor community, we can do outdoor life. We're going to build parks and we're going to build trails for people to walk on and to ride on and all these different things. Until we turn that corner and realize we're getting younger, we're not getting older, and it's going to be a political fight, Payton added. Odessa City Manager Michael Marrero noted that the city has put a lot of money in terms of infrastructure, in terms of investments in new facilities. We took a step and we worked with a partner to build this great facility, Marrero said, referring to the Marriott. I think that all adds to the quality of life. revitalizing downtown is not only meant to reinvest and redevelop it, but as a tool to recruit and retain people. Booth said telemedicine and telehealth became vital during the pandemic, especially in rural communities, where they struggled many times to get their patients to larger healthcare facilities. We were kind of forced into the telehealthcare technology role to be able to continue to provide quality care for these individuals. So I think in the future, from what we've learned from the COVID pandemic, telehealth is going to become vital, especially in rural communities in the Permian Basin, as we continue to move forward with this healthcare model, Booth said. Officials agreed that technology is playing a large role in healthcare now, especially during the pandemic. Medical Center Hospital President CEO Russell Tippin said the hospital has a robot dietitian in the hospital because dietitians are hard to come by. Dr. Timothy Benton, regional dean and professor at Texas Tech Health Sciences Center in Odessa, said the healthcare system is incredibly complex and everyone must collaborate across communities. An audience member asked about the mega hospital that has been discussed between Odessa and Midland. The speaker was concerned with the impact on rural hospitals and medical center. Booth said reducing the number of beds in rural facilities would not make sense. Meyer said MMH has been involved in the mega hospital planning effort to varying degrees over time. My perspective is that it's well-intentioned. I think you heard earlier some conversation about the need for easier access to specialists and for a dramatically improved trauma system across the region. I think those things are worthy goals, worthy objectives, and exactly how they'll get realized over time, I think, is still to be determined. But I do think that from my perspective, the people who've been driving that conversation are vitally interested in making healthcare better for the region, Myers said. There's a good bit of self-interest to that, and clearly you know that the energy industry is only going to prosper and grow if it can build its workforce and bring people here and get them to stay here and realize the vision that Mayor Payton talked about, taking that next generational step to making this a destination. We've got to step forward and do more in order to attract and retain those people. I think it's motivated in the right way, whether it's the mechanism that will create it as a single medical center, maybe even a new medical school, I think remains to be determined. We'll stay at the table of influence as best we can, Myers said. Benton said the first interest is the patient needs, and keeping what's in place now, but meeting the needs of the future. Tippin said they need all manner of health care workers, whether it's lab techs, housekeepers, kitchen workers, or doctors. You can never have enough, and I think that's one thing that pandemic taught us, is just when you think you have enough, you need five more, Tippin said. He said he would like to add subspecialties and are always working to do so. They listen to what people want, what they travel for, and if they're thinking of traveling, whether that service is already here and they don't know about it. Texas Tech Assistant Vice President for External Relations Jessica Zuniga said the idea for the summit came from the TTUHSC President, Dr. Laurie Rice Spearman. The aim was to bring the community together and offer insight on what the future holds for healthcare. This is the first time TTUHSC has hosted something like this. Benton said he thought the summit was incredibly useful. The complexity of the healthcare system is really enormous. I don't think that there is any one entity that can meet that complexity to serve our people. We have to partner, we have to collaborate, Benton said. Quick hits. Story time. The Ector County Library, 321 West 5th Street, has scheduled story time from 10 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. Wednesdays through October 26th in the Children's Department. Call 432-332-0633 or visit ector.lib.tx.us. Art Tales. The Ellen Noel Art Museum, 4919 East University Boulevard, has scheduled an art event for preschoolers and their grown-ups for 2 p.m. today and on every other Wednesday. The event is free. visit knowlartmuseum.org/events. Coco Melon Live. The Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center, 1310 North Farm to Market, 1788 Midland, will present Coco Melon Live, JJ's Journey, on October 5th. Doors open at 5 p.m. Event starts at 6 p.m. Free STI testing and treatment. Texas Tech Physicians Family Medicine Clinic, 702 West 5th Street, is offering free STI testing and treatment from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Wednesdays. Appointments are not required. For more information, call 432-703-5066. English classes. Second Baptist Odessa, 711 East 17th Street, has scheduled classes in English as a second language at 6:30 p.m. Wednesdays. Classes are free and child care is available. Call 432-366-2153. MC celebrates 50 years with free concert. Midland College invites the community to bring your favorite dance partner, grab your boots, and join in MC's 50th anniversary celebration at the Texas Trio Performs at the L. G. Langford Chaparral Center, October 8th, in a free concert suitable for all ages. The performance begins at 7:30 p.m. and doors open at 6:30 p.m. The Texas Trio features Texas swing music performed by country artist Kyle Park, two-time Grammy Award winner Jason Roberts, and keyboardist John Michael Whitby from George Strait's Ace and the Hole Band. The event is our way of saying thank you to the Midland community for the past 50 years, Midland College President Steve Thomas said. We want to celebrate and share our success of 50 years of providing higher education, community services, and cultural enrichment to Midland. Come early to purchase items from some of Midland's best food trucks, including Don Tomas Cafe, Gilly's Mobile Diner, Keats Sweets, and West Texas Chuck Wagon. Tickets are not required for entry. More information available at www.midland.edu/Texas-trio. Funding for this event is provided by the Ray Charitable Trust. Note, beer and wine will be available for $5 per ticket, must be over 21, and present legal picture ID. Tickets sold at door number 1 at Schaap Center. Limit of 2 tickets per person, cash only. Community event set for Transition Learning Center. At 1111 West 12th Street, a relatively inconspicuous building is the location for powerful, life-changing work being done for students with disabilities. Ector County ISD's 18-plus Transition Learning Center, TLC, provides services and resources for not only students, but also the students' families as they plan the transition from school to life after high school graduation. At 10 a.m. today, October 5th, local leaders will recognize the critical nature of the work being done at the TLC by hosting an event to kick off National Disability Employment Awareness Month. Students will lead a short program. Odessa Mayor Pro Tem Mary Willis will mark the occasion with a proclamation. A tour of the facility along with snacks made and served by the students will follow. The goal of the 18-plus program is to provide an easy transition to life after school by providing multiple opportunities to learn and use the skills necessary to function as independently as possible. Students participate in a variety of activities so that the last day of school is identical to the first day of the rest of their lives. Transition to the Future provides individualized transition services and a combination of classroom and community-based environments for individuals with disabilities who are 18 to 21 years of age and have met all their high school requirements. Charter schools get mixed results. Under state accountability ratings, charter schools Compass Academy, Idea UConn, and Harmony Science Academy had mixed results. Harmony Science Academy in Odessa was rated a B. Compass Academy Charter School was a C, and Idea UConn was not rated. Campuses that were not rated were either D or F. Ella Newell Art Museum sets Art Tales fall schedule. The Ella Newell Art Museum has announced its fall 2022 schedule for Art Tales. Art Tales is geared toward art-loving preschoolers ages 3 to 5 who enjoy beautifully illustrated art stories and art activities. This fall, Art Tales will be held in ENAM's new temporary location in the Presidential Archives at UT Permian Basin on 4919 East University Boulevard at 2 p.m. Today's theme will be based on the book Gaston. Gaston encourages individuals to be themselves and celebrate what makes you unique. This class is free and held every other Wednesday. For more information, contact Annie Stanley, educator, at education@newellartmuseum.org or by phone at 432-550-9696, extension 213. Art Tales Fall Schedule. Today, Gaston. October 19th, My Name is Elizabeth. November 2nd, My Map Book. November 16th, The Little, Little House. December 7th, Extra Yarn. Local News Roundup. Man accused of stealing cough medicine. An $8 package of cough medicine led to the arrest Saturday of a 29-year-old man on a robbery charge. According to an Odessa Police Department report, the manager of an HEB on 42nd Street called 911 around 6 p.m. Saturday about a robbery. When officers arrived, she told them Xavier Ray Diaz pushed her into a shelf, scratching her arm. When she demanded he put a package of cortisone cough medicine back as he started out the door without paying for it. She knew Diaz's name, she said, because he had stolen items in the past. Video surveillance backed up the manager's account of the event, and officers went to Diaz's house and arrested him. Robbery is a Class 2 felony, punishable by 2 to 20 years in prison. He remains in the Ector County Jail on a surety bond of $20,000. Two men arrested in connection to aggravated assault. Two Odessa men were arrested late Saturday night after being accused of opening fire on two different victims within a matter of minutes. According to an OPD report, officers received a shots fired call from East 5th Street and North Texas Avenue around 10:30 p.m. Saturday from a man who said the front passenger in a maroon SUV racked around into a handgun and passed it to the driver, who then pointed the gun at him. The man told officers he took cover behind a vehicle, and the driver fired the gun out the window before leaving. Officers found a 9mm shell casing in the middle of East 5th and security footage of a maroon SUV in the area at the time of the shooting. Officers were still on the scene when they got another shots fired call, this one from West 6th Street and Ideson. The caller in that case said the occupants of a maroon Cadillac had fired multiple shots at another vehicle before fleeing the scene. According to the report, officers found the same kind of shell casings in the area, and they later found a maroon SUV at the Red Zone nightclub on East 8th Street. A live round was found near the Cadillac in the parking lot, and it was a SIG 9mm Luger, the same brand as the shell casings found earlier. Officers who had gotten permission from one of the men in the Cadillac to search his phone found a text message sent at 10:30 p.m. stating, "We just busted at two different racial slurs. Y'all be safe, Wes." Officers also found a black Taurus handgun in the center console of the caddy with one round chambered and six rounds inside the magazine. Officers arrested who they believe was the driver of the Cadillac, Donovan Richard Carrillo, 30, and the front seat passenger Juan Olivas Jr., 25, on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, a Class 2 felony punishable by 2 to 20 years in prison. They both remain in the Ector County Jail on $50,000 surety bonds. Woman accused of attacking boyfriend with knife. An Odessa woman was arrested Friday night after her boyfriend accused her of attacking him with a knife. According to an OPD report, police received a 911 call shortly before 7 p.m. Friday about a stabbing victim in the 1100 block of West 13th Street. When officers arrived, they found a 37-year-old man with an open, deep laceration on his left forearm, and he was taken to Medical Center Hospital. Later, when officers spoke to the man at the hospital, he told them his girlfriend, Tiffany Rios, 35, asked him if he was coming to her apartment on Whitaker because she didn't have any money to feed her kids. The man said Rios became upset with him because he wouldn't give her any money, grabbed a knife, and jabbed at him with it. He was able to dodge that attack, but when she swung the knife like a sword, it got his arm. Rios told police her boyfriend came over uninvited, and she swung the knife at him in self-defense after he tried to hit her with a tin bottle. Officers found text messages on the man's phone from Rios telling him to come home. Rios was arrested on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, family violence, a Class 2 felony punishable by 2 to 20 years in prison. Rios remains in the Ector County Jail on a $20,000 surety bond. Odessan may be sentenced to prison. A woman who was placed on 6 years community service for threatening her family with a knife 3 years ago may end up in prison after all. According to Ector County District Court records, Rona Sion Robinson, 25, pleaded guilty to aggravated assault with a deadly weapon in September 2019, but Judge James Rush agreed not to adjudicate her guilty unless she failed to comply with the rules imposed upon her by the county's probation department. On September 16th, prosecutors asked for an arrest warrant for Robinson, stating she has used drugs, failed to pay her supervision fees, and failed to complete an anger management class. According to court documents, they also allege she's failed to meet with mental health doctors, stopped taking her medications, moved without permission, and engaged in offensive contact or communication with two people. In addition, she's not been doing her community service, they allege. Robinson was arrested and booked into the Ector County Jail on Friday and is being held without bond. According to police report, Robinson was arrested on 3 counts of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon in February 2019. Her family members told police Robinson grabbed kitchen knives and started stabbing a TV and began breaking things during an argument with her mother about a table. She was also accused of chasing two family members out the back door. Obituaries and death notices from the Odessa American for Wednesday. Roy Edwin Gilliland Allen, 78, passed from this life on Saturday, September 24th. Roy was born on Thursday, August 17, 1944, in Fallon, Nevada, to Barbara Nay Gilliland. He had 4 children. Those left to cherish his memories are his 2 nieces, Lisa Plattner and Leanne Chapel, and 3 great-nephews. Roy is preceded in death by his biological mother and father, adoptive mother and father, and 1 brother. A memorial service will be held Saturday, October 8th at 10 a.m. at Asbury United Methodist Church in Odessa, with Raul Garcia officiating. Condolences to the family may be made online at acreswestfuneral.com. Sharon Dudley Conlin of Abilene passed away Saturday, October 1st at the age of 74. Sharon was born on November 7, 1947, to Quanah and Lillian Boots Dudley in Merkel, Texas. Survivors include her 3 sons, Christopher Conlin of Abilene, Dean Conlin and wife Sarita Subia of Odessa, Nicholas Conlin and wife Amanda, and kids of San Antonio. Her sister Janie Sharp of Abilene, brothers Larry Dudley and wife Paula of Ty, Joe Dudley and wife Tammy of Merkel, brother-in-law Jimmy Conlin of Benbrook, and her stepmother-in-law, Nancy Conlon of Madison, Mississippi. She is also survived by numerous nieces, nephews, and cousins. She was preceded in death by her husband, John Conlon, Jr., sister-in-law, Carol Ann Brewer, father and mother-in-law, John Conlon, Sr., and Carolyn Conlon, sister-in-law, Vonnie Dudley, parents, Quanah and Lillian Dudley, niece, Tamara Cohen, and brother-in-law, Bob Sharp. Visitation will be held Wednesday, October 5th, from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. at Starbuck Funeral Home in Merkel. Graveside services will be held Thursday morning, October 6th at 10 a.m., Rose Hill Cemetery, under the direction of Starbuck Funeral Home. Pastor Billy Krim will be officiating. Alfred Tio Gonzalez Leyva, Jr., 98, passed from this life Monday, September 26th, with his devoted son Stephen by his side. He was born on February 4, 1924, in Alpine, Texas, to Alfred and Eloisa Leyva, who both preceded him in death. Tio is preceded in death by his sisters Concepcion Hernandez, Jen Munger, Terry Hall, Emma Huerta, and a son, Patrick N. Leyva, and survived by daughters Ruby N. Gutierrez, Sandra Peterson, and Brenda J. Leyva. Sons Alfred Leyva III, Diego G. Leyva, and Stephen C. Leyva. 9 grandchildren and 2 great-grandchildren. Many nieces, nephews, and friends. Arrangements are entrusted to La Paz Purchase Funeral Home. Visitation for Tio will be on October 6th, starting at 5 p.m., with rosary recited at 7 p.m. at La Paz Purchase. Mass will be celebrated at 1 p.m. October 7th at St. Mary's Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Virginia Jenny Wynn Jackson Drennan passed away peacefully on October 1st in Granbury, surrounded by her family. She was 78 years old. Jenny Wynn was born on November 15, 1943, to James Carl and Virginia Wynn Jones Jackson in Tyler, Texas. Jenny Wynn is preceded in death by her husband of 45 years, Gene, her parents, her in-laws Buddy and Clyde Drennan, and her brothers Ronnie Jackson and Jimmy Jackson. She is survived by her children Stephen Drennan of Brownwood, Jincy Drennan Ross, and Jeremy of Granbury, David Drennan of Plano, and her grandchildren. The family will receive guests and visitors at Wiley Funeral Home in Granbury on Thursday, October 6, from 5 p.m. until 7 p.m. A celebration of life will be held on Friday, October 7th at First Presbyterian Church in downtown Granbury at 11 a.m. Graveside services will be at Sunset Memorial Gardens in Odessa on Saturday, October 8th at 1 p.m. Memorials may be made to the Alzheimer's and Dementia Society at alz.org or Alpha and Omega Hospice in care of CHA Foundation, 941 Hilltop Drive, Weatherford, Texas, 76086. You may also contribute donations directly to the Community Hospices of America Foundation by visiting www.chafoundation.net/contribute-online. Lloyd Calvin Hicks, Jr., 91, of Odessa, died Friday, September 9th in Odessa. Graveside services scheduled for 12 p.m. October 8th at Evergreen Cemetery in Stanton, Texas. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Glenda Joyce Hillis, 79, of Odessa, died Monday, October 3rd in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 11 a.m. October 7th at Eisenhower Church of Christ. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Everardo Chapo Vargas, 43, of Odessa, died Saturday, October 1st in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. Friday, October 7th at St. Anthony Catholic Church. Rosary will be at 7 p.m. Thursday night at Acres West 24-Hour Chapel. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Billy Michael Wadel, 48, of Odessa, died Saturday, September 29th in Odessa. Celebration of life is scheduled for 2 p.m. October 6th at Odessa Funeral Home Chapel. Arrangements are by Odessa Funeral Home of Odessa. Linda Sue Gma Woods, 81, of Odessa, died Monday, October 3rd in Odessa. Chapel service is scheduled for 10 a.m. Saturday, October 8th at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Chapel. Public visitation will be at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home Chapel Friday, October 7th. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Garden Cemetery. Arrangements are by Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home of Odessa.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.